Welcome to the Attic in London, the thinking space of Obelisk Support, an award-winning virtual legal service provider connecting over 1,000 freelance legal professionals with in-house legal teams at large corporations and law firms. I'm your host, Laura Latham, and today I'm speaking with Laura Montgomery, a space lawyer and science fiction author, whose latest book, Mercenary Calling, was recently published in January. Laura, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Laura. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm very excited. It's not every day that I speak to a space lawyer. So I would like to start the interview with you telling us a little bit about your career as a space lawyer.
Well, sure. I've been practicing for quite a number of years, almost three decades now. And I started out in private practice at a law firm in Washington, D.C., where I did regulatory work. And then the job came open for a space lawyer with the Department of Transportation. And I went over and interviewed, and it is my firm conviction that I got the job because I went to the Air and Space Museum afterwards and touched the moon rock for good luck. So we all got moved into the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA, after a couple of years there. And that is where I worked for 22 years. The FAA regulates launch and reentry and the operation of what are popularly referred to as spaceports. So I had a great time. I worked on human spaceflight regulations, launch safety regulations, lightning rules, explosive sighting. It's, you know, fairly thrilling, even though some of it's grindingly dull. but big picture, it was a lot of fun. Now I've set up my own shop. I left the FAA about a year and a half ago. And I've testified to Congress a couple of times, to the space subcommittees in the House and the Senate. And I do different types of legal work, all space related. And now I'm teaching a seminar in space law at Catholic University's law school.
So now I have to ask you, so your recent book, Mercenary Calling, I'm not going to give out any spoilers to your future readers, but it's about... Well, there's a lot of lore into it. It's like a science fiction book. Star Trek meets Suits, basically, because it's a lot of science fiction interactions. It's about discovering a new planet that's livable for humans. It's about settling on the planet and all the legal implications that it can have for the human race. So tell us why you wanted to write this book and why, in general, you are writing science fiction.
Sure. Well, I've been reading science fiction since I was 13, and I've always loved the outer space books and the thought that we could go to amazing places. And but whenever I read these books, you know, I started out with Robert Heinlein, and I love C.J. Cherry and others. I always wondered how people on Earth were reacting to things. You know, let's say there was an alien invasion at the edge of the solar system. Well, you know, in the books, Earth always mobilizes really fast. But I always think, well, I'm sure we would squabble about it first. So my books are more ground-based, I call them, because there's going to be a lot of conflict here in dealing with anything with outer space. And I've certainly, you know, seen a lot of that in my own career. So the stories that pop into my head are always about what's going on here. And since I'm a lawyer and I know the law and I do know a bit of space law, I tend to veer in that direction. And, you know, with Mercenary Calling, I think that if someone left a settlement and it was unclear whether it was authorized or not, they might come back and be in trouble. So my lawyer hero, Calvin Tondini, has a new client. The starship captain is charged with mutiny for leaving this settlement behind, and he has to defend her, and she's got a mind of her own. And there's a lot about attorney-client relationships as well as you know, the legal issues. And some of my favorite clients have been difficult, and I think of one who I I really admired her, and she was a handful too. So it's been it was a fun book to write, and you know, since I know the law and I know what it's like to be a lawyer, I felt free to, you know, have my frivolous moments with the book. One of the themes in the book is what we currently call planetary protection. You know, are we going to allow microbes and earth germs to go contaminate Mars when we're trying to figure out if it has life there? But also we want to let people go. So, you know, those are policy issues that need to be balanced. And I let those, I didn't even mean to. I just sort of, the themes played out in Mercenary Calling a little bit there too. So there's a reason there's alien corn on the cover.
I know. Yeah. It took me a while to figure out, but I was excited when I found that.
Yes.
So since you said, I mean, space law is your field, there's a lot of space law written into the book. So tell us how your professional life influences your creative life.
Well, it's certainly given me a lot of ideas. There's always been prizes offered in real life for great innovations, going back to the Longitude Prize back, and I think that was in the 18th century, where they were having troubles navigating and sailing because they couldn't figure out the darned longitude. So a prize was offered, and I think it took decades to win. And then there was the prize that Charles Lindbergh won for flying across the Atlantic. More recently, and in the space field, the X Prize was offered to anyone who could develop their own launch technology to fly to space twice on a reusable rocket within 2 weeks with the capacity to take 3 people. And so that was a big deal for us at the FAA, because we had a lot of people come in wanting licenses. And it was won by Spaceship One of Scaled Composites, which was the company that flew Spaceship One, using Paul Allen of Microsoft's money. I think they spent $20 million to win $10 million. But now they've licensed the technology to Virgin and form Virgin Galactic. So, you know, this sort of prize atmosphere in my daily life, I think, is what gave me the idea for Manx Prize, where our heroine, an engineer, is trying to win a prize of $50 million in gold a few decades from now for bringing in big pieces of orbital debris, because space junk is a real problem up there. So I think that sort of thing, you know, had a real influence on some of my plots. I had Charlotte Fisher in my head. I just didn't know what she was doing. And then one day I said, oh, she's trying to win a prize. So, you know, I've already talked about the planetary protection issues making their way into Mercenary Calling. And I just wrote a short story that is sitting in a magazine waiting to be rejected. We writers are pessimists. and that a lot of the legal issues in that, even though it's about sending a piece of art to Mars, come from, we used to have weekly phone calls with NASA all the time, trying to work out our issues with astronauts going up on launches that the FAA licenses. And there were a lot of legal issues with that. And as I wrote this short story, I just kept giggling, because I kept putting in things that were, you know, from the government astronaut legal interpretation, and from this and from that. And I'm definitely sending that story to my NASA friends when it comes out. So they'll recognize elements. So, you know, there's plenty of what we writers call reader cookies there for a few folks. So, so I'd say that I use a lot of both law and policy and just factual stuff in my writing. I mean, I knew how to research my hard science fiction novel, the orbital debris one, because I knew a lot about launch and reentry, but I didn't know a lot of stuff about what goes on orbit. But I kind of knew how to look it up. So it's been really helpful to my own creative writing to have done all this work in the field, even though I'm no engineer.
It certainly looks, I mean, when I read the book, it looks like you actually know what you're talking about, which is great, both from the engineer perspective and from the legal perspective. So it all makes sense. So do you usually start on a legal idea or on some anecdote you've read somewhere? I mean, how do you start your creative process? How could you please describe it to us?
Well, giving it the name process is perhaps too much credit. I have these things pop into my head. I don't sit down and think, oh, I'm going to write a story and it has to be about something. What should it be about? And then I come up with a list. I have either a character or the idea. And sometimes I marry them up and they do just pop into my head. I have some sort of sarcastic comment that I'm thinking about. And like, well, what if, oh, you know, this is ridiculous. What if someone really did? And then I have a story. And often it's my critical side at work, and then it takes off. So, you know, I'm so in the writing field, we have these two terms, the plotter and the pantser. There are people who outline their stories, and there are people who write by the seat of their pants. And even though I'm a lawyer who does a lot of outlining in terms of figuring out the logic of my arguments, it turns out that on the creative side, I'm a pantser. I learn not to start things if I don't know how they end. But a lot of the times I write to find out what happens next. And the logic sort of comes from the writing of it. And then I sometimes have to go back and rip things out. But that's the nature of things, I guess. So the other thing is when you do your first draft, I make sure my inner editor is just turned off. I do not worry about phrasing and beautiful writing. I worry about that later. Really, you need to find out what's going to happen, and you need to write it, and then you can edit and fix it later. I know the end, I know the beginning, and I maybe know two things that happen in the middle. And the rest of it is I find out as I go along. So it's an adventure.
It sounds like it. I mean, it sounds very organic.
It is, and you know, I write genre fiction. I write science fiction. So when you do that, you need a lot of conflict. You need a strong plot, and things have to happen. And so so there is a part of me that's a little bit conscious of that. You can't just write beautiful description for pages and pages. I get bored, and I'm sure my readers would get bored. So you've got to weave things in.
Actually, that brings me to my next point, because it's your fifth book. So when you published the first one, you were working at the FAA, am I correct? And I'm assuming you must have been very busy. So how, as a lawyer, do you make time to write?
Well, you know, as a lawyer, I live by deadlines, and as I'm sure you and your listeners know, and I came across this little book. I was writing, you know, when I first started, it's like, okay, I'm going to write a paragraph every night. Well, that takes forever. You can't just write a paragraph every night. And I came across a book called No Plot, No Problem. And it talked about National Novel Writing Month, which turned out to be wonderful for me. Every November, all these people across the entire world sit down and try to write a 50,000-word novel. And you sign up online and you input your word count at the end of the day. And that's where I learned to just kill the inner editor. You just don't worry. If it's crazy, okay, you have to write 1,600 words a day. And you have to write more than that, because in America we have Thanksgiving, and you know that you're not going to be getting a lot done over that weekend. So, you know, I aimed for 2,000 words a day. The first year I did it, I only wrote 6,000 words in the month of November. But that taught me that November is magical because it has the deadline. So the next year I wrote a lot more, and my first book took me about 5 years to finish with this really silly approach. But then I learned that you could write a lot in a day. And so now I have, you know, write 10 words at breakfast, because that gets your brain working. And then after lunch, I usually write 1,000 words, especially now that I'm gone from the FAA. But I used to write 10 words at breakfast, which usually was more. And then I would write 700 to 1,000 after lunch and another 1,000 after dinner. And if you just, that's what you do first before you do everything else you're supposed to do. Well, then you do it.
I get it. Yeah, and it's a good, I like the way you describe it. It makes total sense. Start early in the morning, get in the mood, and then just mm-hmm. keep going.
Right, because your back brain will work away at little problems while you're doing other things, and then when you eat your lunch in November, you then just sit down and write, and you don't have lunch with friends, not in November. And then this, of course, is training for the rest of the year, and I now can write outside of November, and I do. but November was really key for me. And so if someone's trying to figure out how to write, you know, start gathering your thoughts and ideas and do your research now. And in November, that's it. I mean, by December 5th, I had nothing left to say. So I knew that November really counted because it was a deadline. And deadlines are magical.
So since you are now, you know, you're a published author, celebrated author, 5 books under your belt, what's your favorite part of writing the book? Is it the first draft, revision? What do you like?
I love writing the beginning, even though I usually go change it later. But the beginning is, it's just so full of possibility. And then as for the drafting, I like the drafting. The editing, not quite as much. In fact, I have something I have to edit, and I know I have to cut a lot out of it, and I'm sort of dreading the process.
Because it's painful.
A little bit. You know, you're like, oh, but people want to know that. Oh, but nothing is happening here, your editor says, so it has to go. Fine. Then you cut it out.
There goes the scene.
Yeah, it wasn't really a scene. It was just a lot of people saying stuff, and, you know, without having any kind of integral role in the plot. It was interesting to me when I wrote it, and it helped me get through not knowing what was happening next, apparently. But when I did know what was happening next, I need to cut the part about him walking from house to house. So,
okay. Well, that's good.
So drafting is the most fun.
That's good to know. Yeah. So tell me, I'm sure you are an avid reader, because I think that usually authors are avid readers.
Oh, yes.
What kind of books are you reading right now? Don't tell me it's science fiction, or it might be science fiction.
Well, I jump back and forth between historical fiction and science fiction. So right now I'm reading Bernard Cornwell's Winter King, which is the retelling of one of the Arthurian legend, and I'm loving it. I think Bernard Cornwell's a wonderful writer, and it's a lot of fun. So it's a very vivid, evocative book that really immerses you in this very different alien world of old England, post-Roman England. It's cool. I think I like very alien settings, and that's part of why I like science fiction. But historical fiction gives you that too.
Now we're down to the two last questions of the interview. The first one, I think it's going to be a yes or no. Since you write about space, though, have you ever had job offers from readers?
Well, the closest I've come is that physicist from Boeing, who's now at a think tank or a consulting group, has asked me to co-author an article with him on orbital debris remediation, you know, bringing in orbital debris and offering a prize for it. So he loved my book, Manx Prize. So he's got a fellow who's going to be doing all the engineering questions and describing the problem on orbit, and then I'll be doing the legal issues. So that's not a job offer, but it is, it's interesting. So
close enough. Close enough. It's pretty exciting. So is it going to be published, or is it published?
It's being written right now. So it's we're hoping written. It'll okay. be published this summer. You know, I think a European space journal. So
European space. Okay. We'll keep an eye out for it.
Okay. I'll let you know.
And a last question for aspiring lawyer authors, and I'm sure there are lots of them out there. What would you say to them? Some words of advice.
Oh, boy. Well, I would say that whatever you're doing in the legal field, it will become grist for your mill later. Go ahead and take it all in. Learn everything you can. You know, if you're a litigator, you're going to have exciting courtroom drama. If you're a regulatory attorney like I am, learn your industry. People love reading books where they actually like learn stuff and they feel like they really are being told about a world with someone who knows. So it's good to be a lawyer. It's good to be many different things in life. And but being a lawyer, you can learn so much about all your clients' issues and concerns, and you can use it. The other thing I'll suggest is something that was recommended to me by my one of my mentors, a science fiction writer, Sarah Hoyt. She's a lot of fun to read, by the way. She always recommends that people read Dwight Swain's Techniques of the Selling Writer. And if you're an avid reader like I am, everything in it is something you recognize from books you like. He talks about structural issues, and you know, the book has to start when something changes. The beginning is over when someone makes a decision. And you're like, oh, I recognize these things. And it really helps you understand how a book is put together, which is sort of a mystery, even if you've read thousands and thousands of books like I have. He breaks it down and articulates it, and you can say, oh, I recognize this, and now I know I'm supposed to do it. It was not happenstance that worked on me as a reader. So
it's about the craft of writing.
It's all about the craft. And there's lots of books that seem to be about craft, but you finish them just as puzzled as you were when you started. This one is good. Dwight Swain's Techniques of the Selling Writer.
Okay, well, that was very interesting. And I did learn a lot of things today. I learned things through your book that I was reading this weekend. And I learned things today about how you write and how you integrate your professional career with your writing career, which I think is totally amazing. So I want to thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us today. And I wish you all the best with your future writings.
Well, thank you, Laura. I really enjoyed chatting with you. It's been really fun.
Thanks for listening to The Attic, a podcast of Obelisk Support. Join Laura Latham and Guest for their next podcast covering the latest legal topics with a unique angle. Subscribe to the RSS feed on The Attic or on iTunes. The views expressed by the participants on this program are their own and do not represent, nor are they endorsed by, Obelisk Support, its employees or affiliates. None of the content should be considered legal advice. As always, consult a lawyer for your legal issues.